Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday morning, April the 15th, 2026. Text day, how about that? 19 minutes past the hour, 68 degrees, and kind of overcast skies here in the Marion area. Want to kick off the morning by letting you know this. I went to McDonald's this morning, and there was quite a line there this morning. Quite a much larger line than normally is there when I go there in the morning. And I finally got up to the window this morning, and I said, kind of busy today. And the lady goes, yeah, it's tax day. So I guess a lot of people, last-minute tax filers or people who get out there on tax day, do go out today. So maybe it'll be a busy day around town, or at least in the restaurants. Maybe people celebrate. They go out and say, hey, it's tax day, and we got it done, and we're filed, and we're good to go. So I thought that was interesting this morning that McDonald's pays attention to tax day, but it is that day. I guess some gifts aren't deductible, as they say. Want to start off the morning doing something here, as we've talked about this week. Colleen Marshall came to Marion last Friday to interview the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. It's going to air in clips this week on the NBC4 local news, and then the full interview will air this coming Sunday morning, 10 to 10:30 on Colleen Marshall's Sunday morning show. I believe it's called Sunday Briefing. While Colleen was in Marion, I did have a chance to talk with her for about 20 minutes. I want to play that interview now, and then we'll come back and talk about all kinds of other things going on in the world. But here is my interview from last Friday with the legendary Colleen Marshall. Hope you enjoy.
Scott Spears, WGH Talk Radio, and we have a very special guest with us today here in Marion. How about that? NBC4's Colleen Marshall. Colleen, what brings you to Marion today?
Well, you know, I have over the years been watching some of your reports and listening to them, your interviews with Mary Ellen Withrow, and I thought, Scott's not the only one who's going to get to talk to Mary Ellen Withrow. So I really wanted to come up. I thought it was timely. There was reports that Donald Trump wants to now put his name, which is rare for a president to want to put his name on currency, and I know that Mary Ellen Withrow is the record holder for having her name on more currency than anybody else in the world. And I thought this is a good time to just touch base with her. And we didn't just talk about that. We also talked, of course, about her history of public service, what she's done not just for Ohio, but for the country, serving as treasurer. And so we had a great conversation.
What did you learn from today's interview?
I learned that her commitment to service started early, and the thing that stuck out to me, and this might not even be what she thinks would stick out, but when she said, I wouldn't have run for office, but someone asked. And I know she's been an advocate, a proponent of women especially getting into public service, of people running for election, of not needing to be a millionaire to serve your community or your country. And to hear her say that, I wouldn't have done it, but somebody asked. We don't ask enough. I think there are a lot of promising people out there who could really serve on school boards, on city councils, on county commissions, in state government, if somebody would just ask. And I think that's the secret.
What was the fork in the road in your life that got you where you are?
I think, you know, it always goes back to teachers, educators. I'm, you know, both of my sisters are teachers. And when I was in college, I always loved to write. I thought I was going to be a long form writer. And one of my college professors, who was a broadcast writing, was a mandatory class for journalism majors. And he said to me, this is your writing style. I want you to think about broadcasting. And he got me an internship at a radio station. And from then on, they hired me while I was still in school. And it's time for the donuts. It's Mary Ellen's clock, but they hired me when I was still in school as a full-time writer. And that was what set me on this path. That job led to another job that led to another job that led me to where I am now.
If people want to see this interview at this point, when could they see it? Where could they see it?
It's definitely going to run on Sunday Briefing. On Sunday, I think it will be the 19th. Is that next Sunday? It's not this coming Sunday, but the following Sunday. We'll have it on Sunday Briefing, which is at 10 o'clock in the morning. But we will also put an unedited version of this. I like people to see the entire interview when they have time online. And of course, next week I'll have, I'm not sure what days yet, but during the week we will have some stories with her that run during newscasts as kind of a tease to the interview on Sunday.
So people will have to tune in all week next week.
Yeah,
NBC4.
Yeah. Every broadcast. Don't watch anything else.
Don't switch the dial. Want to talk about surviving Ohio State very quickly. You were one of the stars of that documentary. President Gee is going to testify now. We've learned that. The documentary itself nominated for 2 Emmys. What do you make of what has happened since last we talked about this last summer?
You know, the documentary has really shined a spotlight on these men. My photographer who's working with me here today, Steve Wainfor. Steve and I started doing these interviews back in 2018, 2019. And we one by one heard these dreadful encounters unroll. And I'm so happy to see these guys get not just national attention, but I think that the public now has a better understanding that boys can also be sexual assault victims. Because at first people weren't believing them. These were elite athletes. How could they be? You know, I think that's the most important thing to come out of not only our reports, but this documentary, this acceptance, this realization that we can send our sons off to college and have them be victims too. Because we don't talk to boys about this. We don't talk to our teenage sons who are on their way to college about what could happen. And I think that's one of the most important things that has come out of this. I hope that there is a better understanding, not just of victims, but of how to be a survivor and what happens if you're not believed.
Exciting that it was nominated for a couple Emmys.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think she deserves that. And she did win the Columbia Journalism Award. Eva Orner is the director of this. And now it's nominated for a couple of, I think, sports Emmys.
I think
that's an amazing thing. And some of the guys who are really out there active, who have their faces on this, who have been willing to share their stories publicly, are also getting more attention. I just yesterday was asked to be on a podcast to talk about this. I'm sorry, I can't remember the woman's name, but along with Mike DeSabato, who was the original whistleblower. So they are getting more attention. I'm quite honestly surprised that the university hasn't found a way to put this behind them, because they're looking worse and worse, and the more of these depositions that take place and the more information that comes out about the number of people and at what level of that university, the number of people who were in high-ranking positions who knew about Dr. Strauss and did nothing. I think they should find some way to settle this, to end it, and try to put them behind it.
I interviewed President Gee back in February. We talked a little bit about this. He said he did not see the documentary, and he knows nothing according to his paperwork. Since then, he has been subpoenaed to testify. Do you think he hasn't seen the documentary? Do you believe that? And do you think it will be significant that he will testify, or will we get my record show that I don't know?
I will tell you that every one of them has been asked if they watched. I'm not going to single anyone out, but I will say this. If you are on the board of directors or the president of this university or a former president of the university, and this is part of the national discourse that people across the country are talking about a documentary that puts your university in this kind of a light, it's almost irresponsible to not watch it. You need to know what the people, what your alumni, what the people who support you, what they are seeing and what they are saying. maybe you won't believe all of these survivors, but if you don't watch it, it's almost a fiduciary responsibility problem that you have and that the other members of this board have.
I guess we really don't know if President Yi watched it or not, but why would he or they say that? As you say, they all tend to say that.
I think probably their legal advisors are saying, you know, because there's evidence, as you know, that rolls out in that documentary that is incontrovertible. There are documents that show reports were made. There is admissions on the part of some of the doctors who were above Richard Strauss, who admit there's an admission from one of the coaches that he knew about it. So I think, I can't imagine that the attorneys for the school haven't watched this documentary, but I think they're probably saying, don't watch it or don't admit you watched it, because then you will have knowledge that is incontrovertible. And they don't want that out there.
You, more than anybody, would probably know that President Yi is mentioned in a lot of these reports, that
yes,
there were meetings and things
yep
did happen. He says, my papers show nothing went on and I don't remember anything, and so on and so forth. Do you think when put under oath, his answers will be different?
They might be, because if you remember this, Scott, when he was president of Ohio State University, I will say this, one of the remarkable things about Gordon Yi was his memory. He would meet someone and years later remember their name. Gordon Yi was known for having this sharp mind with a brilliant memory, something I don't have. I can never remember names. But Gordon Yi was known for that. So now he has this part of his memory that's blank. It's not my place to judge anyone, but I will point out that he was known for having remarkable recall abilities.
Is this the big fish in these depositions because of his name recognition, because he was the president of the university at the time?
I think there are a number of big fish. They already interviewed Andy Geiger, who was the athletic director at the time. They interviewed Jim Jordan, deposed Jim Jordan, who was an assistant athletic coach, now a Congress member. They have interviewed, I believe, Russ Hellickson, who was the head wrestling coach. Many of the survivors who came forward were wrestlers under Russ Hellickson. I think they have a number of people who could be considered big fish. They also interviewed, of course, Les Wexner in another case, but he said he didn't remember anything about Strauss, even though he was board chairman. Here's the other thing. If there was an investigation, which we know happened in 1998, and they removed Dr. Strauss from being around students at the health center, they more or less gave him emeritus status and allowed him to retire. If all of that was going on and it wasn't reported to the administrators, it wasn't reported to the athletic director, and it wasn't reported to the president of the university, they've got a processes problem, because that's the kind of information that should have been pushed up the chain. And if it wasn't, why wasn't it? How could you not know these things were going on? So it'll be interesting to see if and when they make those depositions public, how these questions were answered.
I want to talk very quickly about politics before we run out of time, because the primaries are coming up, Cinco de Mayo, less than a month from now. And do you think that will affect voter turnout? There's been a lot of talk about that primary day being on Cinco de Mayo. A lot of people don't tend to turn out for primaries in any event.
Yeah.
I don't know,
because Cinco de Mayo celebrations are usually in the evening.
That's
although
right,
some people start all day. I hope it doesn't. I hope people vote. I just think more than ever, our votes matter. I think so many people, though, are disenchanted with the political process. They're seeing the infighting. You know, the Congress on both sides, their reputation is about as low as it can get. But people have to remember the only way it's going to change is through your vote. Put people in office that you think will be responsive to your needs. So, I don't know. We'll wait and see.
Jim Renacci, I had an interview with him yesterday, ran for governor last time, and
yeah,
he said at this point, associating yourself with Donald Trump in Ohio is a liability. Do you think so?
I don't know. You know, Scott, I've really wondered about this, because three times he won very big in the state of Ohio. J.D. Vance owes his position to Donald Trump. So does Bernie Moreno. He wasn't prevailing in that Senate race until Donald Trump stepped in. A lot of people in this state have taken their political direction from Donald Trump for a very long time. I think certainly the luster is fading. I think the affordability problem for people in this state and around the country, people are really having struggles right now. Gas prices, this war that we really can't get a clear excuse for, and the fact that there was an insistence that the nuclear weapons have got to go, and then we see this agreement come out, oh, they can still have an Iranian enrichment program. People are confused. And I just hope that the confusion doesn't keep them away from the polls.
Two quick questions I want to get in about races here coming up. Vivek Ramaswamy, a year ago at this time for governor, people almost felt he was a shoo-in. He had Trump's endorsement. The Republican Party had endorsed him, sort of unprecedented here in Ohio, yeah, before the primary. Ran Dave Yost off. Jim Tressel decided he wasn't going to run based upon that. And now, if you look at almost any poll, Amy Acton either leads or is in a dead heat with Ramaswamy. And Ramaswamy's being primaried by Putsch. What do you make of Ramaswamy's, I don't want to say downfall, but certainly deterioration in the last year?
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is mixed up with the whole, you know, fading of the Trump influence. How much of it just is... what someone said to me, and I don't know if this is true, but it was a Republican pundit off the record said to me, you know, he does not, people like him when he's in a group speaking. He's a brilliant man, very smart, but he doesn't always come across as likable. And you'll notice, Scott, in the commercials that are running right now, you don't see Vivek Ramaswamy. You see his very likable wife. You see a senior citizen who is talking about the need for property taxes to roll back. It's going to be fascinating to see. He has all of this money, more money than ever for a gubernatorial race. Will he show up in his own ads? And how is he being perceived by people? And sadly, I will see online people making very racist comments about him. And you wonder if that's going to play in. But you know, we were joking about it in the newsroom. Well, Ohio voters have to choose between a woman and a person of color, two minority groups, really, for governor of Ohio. It's going to be, one of my friends said, we're going to see if Ohio's more racist or more sexist. That's going to determine this race.
That's quite a race. Is Amy Acton doing the right things? Is she doing the right things right now? Just kind of laying back, speaking, not really attacking?
Yeah, I think they have a strategy of she's meeting very individually with a whole lot of people. She made a, you know, she's been out there for more than a year meeting one-on-one or with small groups. She very smartly went into areas that are traditionally Republican and met with, like, farmers' wives. Let's talk about what your issues. What are the problems your family is dealing with that the state government could help you with? So I think their strategy might work for her.
Because we're doing this interview in Mary Ellen with Rose Living Room, I have to ask this, because she has endorsed and is the honorary chairperson of Seth Walsh's candidacy for treasurer of the state, mm-hmm, on the Democratic side. But this Republican primary is fascinating, in which Jay Edwards for treasurer has been endorsed by J.D. Vance, and Christina Roehinger has been endorsed by Vivek Ramaswamy.
What does
that say?
I thought, wait a minute, you guys didn't get on the same page?
Yeah.
Which I thought that was surprising, too, because if you look at the rest of the ticket and the way that they endorsed Ramaswamy so early, the Republican Party generally gets its ducks in a row. But to have the gubernatorial candidate and the vice president of the United States from Ohio having two different endorsements, I thought that was really telling about their relationship and how, let's be honest, everybody thinks in the next presidential election, those two could both be trying for it. Mm-hmm. Are they right now trying to line up their own supporters? Fascinating. It'll be interesting to see which one of them prevails.
Two parting questions here. You've been at NBC4 for 40 years. We've got the big election coming up. How long are you going to keep on keeping on?
Well, it'll be 42 years at the time of this election.
There we go.
In October, it'll be 42.
40 plus, yeah.
Yeah. I that's the $64 million question. I definitely am going to be there through this gubernatorial election year. I am the political director, and I told them I would be here until at least December, and then we're going to talk, but I think it's time for me maybe to go part-time, or I don't know. It'd be great to someday do just politics. I've been working nights for a very, very, very long time. In fact, if I'm not working nights anymore, my husband and I might get a divorce because we're never in the house together at the same time. He goes to bed like 10 o'clock. I get home at midnight. You know, I'm up till 2 in the morning. He's up at 6 in the morning. We are on completely different schedules. It's like, oh, well, this, you know, will my marriage survive my retirement?
If you could interview anybody right now, who's the big get?
Well, always the president.
Right.
No matter who the president is, that's a big get. Always. But who would I want? You know, I'm often asked, who would you want to interview? You know, if you could interview anybody in all of time. And I just really struggle with that question. I mean, other than everybody would want to interview Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess the president. I interviewed him before. Did not go well. But it's always good to get the person who's in the White House. And I would also like to interview, you know, some of his cabinet members and just say, explain this to me. And I've interviewed J.D. Vance many, many times. He's done such a flip-flop on so many big issues that it would be interesting to talk to him and say, hey, just tell us why. Tell us why.
With I know that said that was the last question. I'm going to slip one in here. In Ohio, in the election cycle we're in, all the things going on at Ohio State, who's the big get in that group right now?
At Ohio State?
Yeah, or Ohio State. Politically, in Ohio, the state of Ohio.
I would have said the president until he left, because...
Yeah, well, that'd still be a good get, wouldn't it, to talk to him about that?
Right, the new president, I'm sure, who's been around and might know a lot about it, the president of the university. But I really wish I could get an honest one-on-one interview with Russ Helligson. Mm. I've reached out to him, and he did not want to talk. This really has... damaged his legacy. I, in some ways, feel for him. You know, he was a great coach. These guys all looked up to him. They feel abandoned by him. I would like to give him the opportunity to talk about all of that and say, you know, what do you want to say to these guys who really admired and thought of you as a father figure? And of course, try to get an interview. I've interviewed Jim Jordan about this. I'm not sure he was as forthcoming as he could have been.
You know, we don't know when you leave. We hope you don't leave. But when you do, or even go part-time, they'll say, there goes one of the greats.
Oh,
one of the all-time
so nice.
Greats.
Thank you.
Colleen Marshall. Thank you so much.
I'm sitting in the living room of Mary Ellen Withrow. That's one of the all-time
That's
greats.
That's not bad. Colleen Marshall, NBC4.
Thanks.
Colleen Marshall, you can't go wrong there. She always gives you a great interview, and she always does a great interview. Don't forget, one night this week, two nights this week, at some point, clips of the Mary Ellen Withrow interview she did last Friday will air on the evening news, so you're just going to have to watch her newscast every night this week on NBC4, and then the full interview will air on Sunday morning, 10 to 10:30 a.m. on her Sunday briefing show on NBC. All right, the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. I think there was a lot of information in that broadcast, or that interview, the broadcast of that interview, I guess I should say. I think her thoughts on the Withrow interview, her thoughts on Ohio State at this particular point, surviving Ohio State, her thoughts on the political world, there's a lot to talk about there, and her thoughts on leaving NBC4, or possibly going part-time, sounds like it may happen at the end of the year. I don't know. But I will say this. If she does leave, it will be really one of the longest tenured Columbus, Ohio personalities, news personalities leaving, and certainly, without question, one of the best. So, there you are. 740-383-9944. The phone lines are open this morning. Feel free to give us a buzz if you have anything to say about that interview or anything else. As many of you know, on Monday night, Sean Wilson was elected, sworn in as the new 4th Ward City Council person, replacing Twyla Lang, who opened up a vacancy there when she became treasurer of the city of Marion. Firefighters ratified their new contract with a 0% increase in salaries. I think that's a fairly substantial story. And today is tax day here in Marion. Kind of a wet tax day. We got a lot of rain last night. I don't know what that means. April showers bring May flowers. If you get rain on tax day, does that mean anything? I'm not sure. You know, here's something, though. I was thinking about this tax on tips thing. No tax on tips that we have now. Now, I'm not sure that I really understand this. Okay, so if you work in a restaurant where you're primarily paid in tips, you know, 80% of your wage is tips, essentially you don't pay income tax anymore. You only pay income tax on that maybe 20% of your wage that you actually claim. So essentially, those people who work in restaurants and bars for tips don't have to pay income tax. Now, why aren't people upset about this? Because, you know, it doesn't seem to make sense to me, because people want to do away with the property tax here in Ohio, and yet maybe people want to do away with the income tax too. I'm not sure how we're going to fund or pay for anything, but if you work the typical job where you don't get tips, you still have to pay income tax, but because you work in a restaurant or a bar or something like that where tips are fairly prevalent, you don't pay tips? You don't pay tax now? I don't know. I never really thought about it, I guess, until the last few days. I don't get paid in tips, so I don't know. Does anybody have any thoughts on that? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. 46 minutes past the hour here on this tax day, Wednesday morning, April the 15th, 2026, 4/15/26. We had an interview yesterday with Casey Putch, the other person running in the Republican primary, other than Vivek Ramaswamy. You know, I'll tell you, I'll give Casey Putch this. When he comes on, he certainly doesn't hold anything back. And doesn't sound, you know, I believe, and these are paraphrases from the interview yesterday, but I believe that he more or less said, if outright didn't say, that he thought that Vivek Ramaswamy was worse than Amy Acton. Now, he's clearly no fan of Amy Acton, but to say that he's worse than her, this is the man who probably is going to be running for governor, Vivek Ramaswamy, on the Republican ticket. You know, the damage that can be done because of this divide in the Republican Party could be very, very substantial. You know, and we've talked about this divide. If you feel a divide doesn't exist in the Republican Party now, I don't know what planet you're living on here in Ohio. I mean, the treasurer's race certainly is a great example of that. You've got Jay Edwards being endorsed by the vice president. You've got Christina Rogner being endorsed by Vivek Ramaswamy. You have got Vivek Ramaswamy being primaried by a guy who clearly does not like him one bit, wouldn't vote for him, even if he is the nominee, Ramaswamy, that is. And yesterday, Putch, who was a big fan of Donald Trump, seemed to feel the same thing that Jim Renacci felt last week, that Donald Trump is a liability to the candidates in Ohio right now. And maybe that's what Vivek Ramaswamy is feeling now. You know, Colleen Marshall said it there in that interview. Casey Putch said it yesterday. a lot of people have said this to me, that Ramaswamy is not appearing in his interviews. His voice is not in the interview. He's not in the interview. Does he have a likability problem? You know, I guess it really doesn't matter how smart you are or what you know. I guess it's, do we like you? Does he have a likability problem? I don't know. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you have any thoughts on this or anything else, give me a buzz. Coming up on 49 minutes past the hour here, WGH Talk Time. Always good to hear from the listening audience out there. And hope you enjoyed that interview with Colleen Marshall. So here we are. I guess those are the topics at this particular point. And then, of course, we've got the Amy Acton story, which I believe is being written about for the first time in the Columbus Dispatch today. This whole story about what happened back in 2019 at her home. Bexley police being called, apparently, according to the police report, we've got to say, a mirror being pulled off the wall, shattering the glass, her becoming upset because she felt her husband antagonized her, told the officers that she'd been drinking, had taken an unknown amount of prescription drugs, and was about to drive away in her car before her husband, who had also been drinking, told her not to do it. You know, I don't know. The campaign denies a lot of this, but the story is getting some traction now. I believe it is in the Columbus Dispatch today, and we have yet to hear from Amy Acton. I think that's not a good idea. I'm not sure why we're not hearing from her. Again, as I've said all week, is it a big deal that a married couple has a fight? No. Now, it does get a little more interesting when the police are called, but, you know, it's becoming a big story because she's not saying anything. Everything's coming through press release and everything's coming through the campaign, and I don't understand why things are being handled that way. I don't think that's the best way to handle anything. 51 minutes past the hour here. Does anybody have any thoughts? 740-383-9944. And by the way, I do go back and forth on this in a way. Because I have thought all week, okay, yes, couples do have problems. Couples who are married have problems. They have arguments. That happens. But I don't know if it's common to break things. I don't know if it's common to be so loud that somebody calls the police. You know, I don't know if that is common. I go back and forth on it. It certainly is not the first time it's ever happened to a married couple or any couple in general. But I think when that happens, it does become a bigger story than a couple just having a disagreement. I don't know. Have a lot of people had the cops called on them for arguing with their spouse? And again, this is 2019. This is before Amy Acton was known by anybody. Go ahead, caller.
You said you don't know how common it is, but it happened once to her. So is that really common?
Well, no, but I would imagine there are a lot of people who've been married in relationships for a long time that it's never happened to.
So, I mean, nothing's ever gotten broken?
Well, I don't. See, here's the thing. And again, I go back and forth on this all week long. Because I have to believe, and I do believe, obviously, that couples scream at each other. That couples get loud and couples have arguments. I'm not denying that, and I don't think that that's the end of the world. But what I think is, does it happen so often that somebody calls the police without going over to the house? Does it happen so often where somebody is intoxicated? Does it happen so often where things get broken, whether they're thrown in anger or what? You know, what was heard, even if these walls were paper thin, and I doubt they were, in Bexley, this had to be a pretty loud argument. for somebody in the neighborhood before 9:45 p.m. to call the police.
Well, if she was trying to leave in her car, maybe it escalated outdoors.
Right, and I guess that's my question. Is that kind of a dispute common to where... Because you got to think 2019...
Actually, it's probably not in the area where she lives. So if they were outside shouting at each other, that would probably be enough to alert that neighborhood to call the police.
Right, but I mean...
In my house, they just go and watch, make sure nobody gets hurt.
Well, here's the thing. Domestics happen all the time, but I'm guessing... It's probably not even 5% of the domestic squabbles that have the police called on them. So it is a rarity if it's that low of a percent. Now, arguing is...
I think it would probably depend on the area and how often the police get called, but, you know, in the history and that sort of thing, but... Domestic violence happens more often than we think, but yes, you're right, as far as the cop calling situation, I agree. But when you're in a more peaceful... Okay, so if I were in Chateau Ridge, for example, and I saw people outside fight... Now, I live where I live, so I'm going to do the same thing when I see people fighting regardless. I'm going to sit back and see what happens, and not out of entertainment, simply because there's no point in calling the cops when people are arguing. I mean, it's a waste of resources and time. If someone's about to get hurt or someone is being hurt, yeah, I'm going to call the police. But if they're just going to argue, there's no point in calling the police over people arguing. But in Chateau Ridge, I can imagine that people standing out front arguing and calling each other names goes over like a lead balloon, as opposed to my house. You got the whole neighborhood standing outside watching you see who's going to win. Do you see what I mean? Like, that's in Bexley, I'm sure that's Chateau Ridge on steroids. You're talking very affluent area, so if there's anyone outside yelling, they're going to call the police.
Right, but I guess what I'm thinking about is I have never, and I've always had neighbors, I've never had an instance in my
life.
You're
even further east than Chateau, Spears.
Well, I didn't realize. but I've never thought that I needed to call the cops on a couple arguing. Now, have I heard couples having disputes? Yes, but not to the level to where I ever thought that I needed to call the police.
Was you standing behind the car yelling, "You're not going anywhere because you're drunk"?
No, but see, now that...
So, I mean, would you call the police if you saw that happen?
I don't know. See, here's the problem with this one, and I'm not, again, I am not trying to come down on Amy Acton. All I'm saying is...
Oh, it's not good. I'm not saying it's
no,
a good situation.
I'm just saying, in 2019, nobody knew who she was. So this is just your average citizen at that point. And the fact that this got so escalated that the police had to be called, and I don't even think her campaign knows who called the police.
But did they have to be called if they didn't do anything? Did they really need to be there?
Well, I don't think the person in the neighborhood did it because they thought things were okay. Let's put it that way.
Okay, but were they an overreactor? Were they what? And over here in the hood, we call them cop callers. Were they a cop caller?
Well, here's the problem, though. Because the police report says a lot of things, and then her campaign denies it, and she hasn't said anything yet. And here we are. 5 days after this report first came out.
Hey, we'll just keep spelling Vivek's name out, his full name out, and that will incense everyone.
I heard
Colleen Marshall say it. I didn't realize that he hadn't been appearing in his own ads until she said it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Casey Putch and I talked about that yesterday.
I kind of turned him off. I did not vote for him. I was wrong. I turned him off after a certain point. He is a bit aggressive.
Well, what about him? I mean, here's a guy who all but said yesterday, and I'm only saying that because I don't remember the interview word for word. I mean, he's no fan of Amy Acton, but he basically said that Vivek was worse.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Republican.
And he's very Indian.
Very Indian. And what
very
else?
Indian.
There was another term he used when I asked if he was a racist. A dung beetle. That was it.
Yeah, I did some reading about him after that interview yesterday, and he's quite the fella.
Right, so, you know... Here,
I picked Vivek before I picked him.
Yeah, but here's the problem in the whole here, as Colleen Marshall said. we tiptoe around this because we don't want to be called racist, I guess, as news people. But the truth of the matter is, there is a racist overtone going on against Vivek right now. There's no doubt about it.
Yes.
No doubt about it.
You and I have talked about this before, but I saw it very heavily this weekend, and it really was. People were spelling out his first, middle, and last name and his wife's first, middle, and last name on the internet, and they are Hindu names, and his children have Hindu names, and people are incensed by it, and they're saying that this, you know, they're spelling out his name, and they're saying this name will never be in the governor's mansion.
Right, and I want to say that there is no racism in the world, or that it's very little in Ohio where we live, because that's what we're talking about. But I'm telling you, primary night, mark my words, pay attention to Marion County, Morrow County, Wyandotte County, Meigs County, places like that in general, and see what his vote totals percentage-wise are, and then see what Mike DeWine's were 4 years ago. And I'm not saying that we're racist, but I'm...
You've got a story in the making, is what you're saying.
I think primary night's going to tell a lot in regard to the Maine. And I think Vivek's got a big, big problem there. And it's not a problem of his own. It's just where he was... I don't want to say it's where he was born, but what he was born into, I guess, is the problem.
It's his religion. That's not a problem. I mean, it shouldn't be a problem for him, but... Sadly, it seems like it's going to be.
I don't
want the guy to be governor, but I don't want him to not be governor because he's a Hindu.
Yeah, but Hindu, you know, even that is a little bit of a front in a way. Because, listen, there's been a reason we've never had a non-white governor. There's probably a reason we've never had a female governor elected.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, to sit there and say that, oh, nobody qualified ever ran... You know, or we just couldn't find somebody. That's not true. And we say that a lot. You know, oh, maybe just nobody ever wanted to run. Well, Ken Blackwell...
Colleen made a great point. We're going to decide... Well, yeah, Ken Blackwell. I forgot about him.
And he did not win.
Point.
And he was a Republican.
Are we more racist or are we more sexist? I guess we find out in November.
Well, that's right. But that's been the long-term problem. And I'll tell you why it's less of a problem for Amy Acton is because her votes come from the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party comes from bigger population areas, which tend to have less of a problem with those things. Vivek's got to win the rural areas. And not that rural areas are more, have bigger problems with that, but it certainly seems to be that way.
We're not as progressive, let's put it that way.
So, you know,
not politically correct, we're not as progressive in our ideology.
Could be.
Yeah.
All I know.
Politically correct, Spears.
All I know is that I, well, you know what, I'm not sure either one of them's doing a great job right now. You've got Vivek out there. Having to face the racism in this campaign, and you've got Amy Acton out there who for some reason will just not answer this NBC story, and now it's in the Dispatch today. So now it's right in her backyard. It's not going to go away, and I don't know why she just doesn't answer it. It wouldn't have gotten this far.
Well, you don't answer questions when you don't have to, I guess, and regardless, she's got a 50-50 shot.
Well, will it hurt her, though, is the question. It's not going to hurt her with people who already like her, but is it going to hurt her with the independents, which are the people you have to win?
Will people stay home because Vivek's name is Vivek?
Well, the Republican Party has such a divide in it right now. I mean, all you had to do was listen to that Casey Putch interview. And if Casey... I'm telling you, I don't think he'll get 10% of the vote on primary day, but if he gets anywhere near 10%, Vivek's got a huge problem. He can't lose 10% of the Republican vote in the Maine.
3D test. I'm just sitting here doing it in my head. I'm like, yeah, that's 3D test. Those are going to count, and if they don't show up in May, they're not going to show up in November.
And just remember, Mike DeWine, last time we had no incumbent governor, Mike DeWine only beat Rich Cordray, I think, by 4 points. So you can't lose 10 of your own party.
And so it goes.
We'll be back next hour. Stay tuned. We're coming back.
Watch me.
Yes, absolutely.
But I don't get involved in politics.
No, not in politics. But as a human being, what kind of person is he?